This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Tom Romley,
Jane Bolton,
Colleen Romley,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Tom, you had an apprenticeship here in Ashurst, didn't you?
I did. I had an apprenticeship with Patent Engineering, as it was called then. And it was virtually a blacksmith shop.
So were there many people working there?
Yeah, two others.
Okay.
The proprietor and his top hand.
Yeah.
Edward Hughes, or Ted Hughes, as he was called.
Ted Hughes, okay. And he was the one that you were apprenticed to? Or
well, I was apprenticed to Mr. Patton, actually, because he was a proprietor. But my instructor, if you like, was Ted.
Okay.
And he was a fitter welder, I suppose you'd call it nowadays.
Yeah, okay. So did this involve much instruction, or you were just sweeping floors and learning from what you can pick up?
First year, virtually every morning, I had to make a set of shoes. Horseshoes.
Horses.
Okay.
That was my first job, like to forge and make a set of shoes, because it was really a blacksmith shop.
Yeah, okay. So what did it take much to learn how to do that?
Well, yes, it did.
So when were the shoes that you made sort of serviceable? Would it happen very quickly? Or?
Oh, yeah. First 3 or 4 months, I suppose, it was a bit slow getting there, but we got the hang of it after a while, and you'd make several sets in an hour. You'd make up to 4 sets an hour.
Oh, very good.
Which, in other words, about 12 shoes, yeah.
Yeah.
Different sizes, though, Tom, weren't they? All different, depending on the pony or a horse or a draft horse.
Because that was another part of the learning that I did, was farrying.
Okay.
Being a farrier.
So what do you do? You measure up a horse first and then you make
the
shoe?
Well, you get to know the size of the horse's feet.
Okay.
I mean, they go by numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know.
Oh, okay.
Then you get draft horses and that sort of thing.
So what size were the draft horses?
Big ones.
Huge. But what, they're size 12?
Yeah, like that. Yeah.
Right. Did you shoot them hot? Were you hot?
Yeah, I learned to shoot them hot, yes. Yeah. But out in the field, we never did. If we were at
You didn't take the forge with you in the back of your truck or
something? No.
What were the other things they taught you besides that?
Well, all sorts of things.
Well, when did the welding come into it?
Well, the welding was perhaps later. Perhaps after the second year. Or during the second year. The first year was learning how to use your tools, that sort of thing.
Okay.
I mean, it was pretty antiquated, you know. I mean, we're talking about the 50s.
Yeah. Did you have to buy your own tools?
Well, you didn't need very many. A hammer and that was about it. And, I mean, the workshop was pretty antiquated.
Yeah.
You had a shafting driven by electric motor. And off that you ran your grinder and your saw bench and your drills and all that sort of thing off the one thing. You'd get killed today if you didn't.
Did you wear earmuffs? What, did you have ear protection?
Oh, no, you don't have those.
No protection, Jane. So how was the hearing? How do I remember that?
Well, that's why we got these things here.
Not good.
Was that normal then? So most of the places where people were apprentices, it would have been a small business with 2 or 3 people?
Especially in the country,
So were there many places like this in Ashurst?
No.
Just the one that served all of Ashurst and the surroundings?
Yeah. Originally, many years ago, there was three blacksmiths here, farriers.
Yeah.
Mind you, that was way back in the early 1900s, I suppose.
So. Yeah, yeah. So most of the work was with horses, or you?
No. We sort of branched out, and we used to make tractor trailers.
Mm.
Trailers for towing behind the tractor.
Yep.
That was another job we did.
Mm-hmm.
Make those, build those up.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do any wheels, you know, when they had the old wagon wheels?
Yeah, the odd occasion we did. We had a wheel bed, which is a big cast iron bed, round thing, flat, and that's where you put bolted your wheel down onto, and then you heated up the tyre, as they called it, which is the rim, the steel iron, just ordinary iron, not steel, iron rim, and forge weld it, not electric weld it, forge weld it.
So what's the electric forge welding is, how is that different?
By fire, done by fire.
Okay, so you hold it into the
yeah, and get it nice, so because the iron is different to steel, and iron will run, it'll you used to shape them all like that a bit, and then you overlapped them, you see, so that you didn't have a lump in it.
You mean the join? So you sort of angle them and then sort of melt into each other.
Quite intriguing, actually, because to measure a wheel accurately and to measure the inside of a rim, how would you go about it?
Oh, you're telling us.
Well, yeah.
So you have a runner. It's a little tool with a wheel and a mark on it.
Yes.
Okay, and you run it around the inside, and you count the numbers of times it goes around, and you write that down.
Okay.
Then you go around the outside of the wheel,
yeah,
and you count the numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, the rim has to be smaller than the wheel. Mm-hmm. Catch on?
Yep.
So the only way you're going to get it on is to heat it up, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it expands.
Yep.
So when you heat it up, and you put it on the rim, you've got to cool it down quickly.
Mm.
Yep.
So that's when you need buckets of water, otherwise it'll burn the
rim. Wood. Yeah. Oh, right.
And of course it'll only go from here to there, and then the thing will fall off. So it's
quite
you had to devise the thickness of this,
of the
rim, if you like.
Yeah.
And calculate to the best of your ability how much to make it smaller.
Yep.
So that it'll cramp up. And of course, in the process of the cramping up, it tightened all the fillies, which was the outside rim, wooden rim, onto the spokes, which went into the hub.
Oh, gosh.
So it was quite a complicated setup, and it just crunched it all together, you see.
And then would you also need the pairs of wheels to be exactly the same size?
Well, preferably.
Yeah. As near as possible?
Yeah. Okay, and was this a one-person job, or you?
Oh no,
several
people.
A few people.
Yeah, several people involved in that.
Yeah.
But I mean, we didn't do a lot of it, but we did a few wheels. Yeah,
okay.
So I learned a little bit about it.
Yeah, have these skills died out now?
No, they're actually coming back into vogue.
Oh, and what as a hobby or?
Yeah, virtually. I mean, all these. You know, museums and that sort of thing.
Oh, yes, of course.
They've got to reconstruct the wheels and things like this, so they need a wheelwright.
So there's young people who are happy to learn this.
Oh, absolutely.
So what happened there? Then it was the normal thing, and it was quite dominant, and then it sort of died out a bit.
Well, I mean, the tractors started coming in, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So. Tractors came in.
Tom, getting back to your apprenticeship, did it involve going to school, like building apprenticeships, doing papers?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Had to go to Palmerston North Tech School, night school.
Yeah.
Which was on you.
Mm-hmm.
So you
was that for welding and fitting experience, welding and fitting papers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you had to pay for it?
Yep.
Was that expensive? Were there high fees in those days?
Not particularly, but I mean, it was time that you
had to pay.
You had to go into town.
How did you get there?
In my old car.
And that was a?
Morris Cowley, 1928.
Right,
that's amazing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So were there many people from Ashes going to the to the tech?
But Tom, while you had your apprenticeship, you were being paid while you were learning, actually on the job, you were being paid.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have to pay them to...
My first pay as an employee, or an apprentice if you like, when I first started, was 15 shillings a week.
Which equates...
That's
$1.50.
$1.50, yeah.
Of which 5 shillings was mine, 5 shillings went in the bank, and 5 shillings was rent.
Board and keep to your parents.
Hmm.
Good. Yeah. I approve of that.
But did it seem like a lot of money in those
days? Yeah, because I didn't have any before.
Yeah. So what did you spend it on? Entertainment?
Cigarettes?
Dancing?
No, when you're 15, you don't sort of get into that quite so much.
Were you driving at 15?
Hmm?
Were you driving to school at 15?
Yeah.
At
Pontiac?
I got my
licence
when I was 15.
Okay.
Hmm. You got your licence. Was there a test?
Yes.
Yeah. A serious one?
Yeah.
What, just theory or just
driving? No theory.
No theory. So it's just an examiner sat in the car with you, you drove around, a policeman, and then he said, yes, that's okay. Yeah. Did you need lessons before then, or...?
So you're driving on the farm. Were you driving on Broadland?
I suppose I learned somewhere. Yeah, so 15 shillings.
How did you find the lessons then?
The lessons?
Yeah.
It was all practical, nearly all practical work.
Okay.
And a few lessons, yes. Being not particularly interested in schoolwork, I found it a little bit different when it came to mathematical things. I found I had to do a lot of that, so I had to smarten my ideas up a bit about that.
Uh-huh. And you needed that later, you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
Mm. Even now, the kids will ask him... mathematical things. So he must have had a bench, but he hadn't been using it very well.
Probably the mental arithmetic is something that older people were trained in more than some of the younger ones.
Well, and pick things you pick up on your lifetime, you know.
Makes a difference if you can see a purpose for it, doesn't it, really?
If you're using it in your
work. If you're using it in your work, it's an incentive to get into it.
Yeah, it's easier to remember.
Oh, yeah,
So how long did your apprenticeship take?
5 years.
Whew.
10,000 hours. And really, that is only, in my opinion, now, the apprenticeship, when you're finished with it, just makes you know what to do with your tools that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
There's such a lot more things you've got to learn.
Later on.
You don't know everything when you've done your apprenticeship. All you've learnt to do is to work the tools that you're using.
But you are able to actually do things straight
away.
Tom, weren't you repairing tractors and went on, even with Tim Patton, your employer at the time, to building steel constructions as well?
That
started with him.
That's where we started into the structural work. Building buildings for farmers, like hay sheds and wool sheds. And
You prefabricated and then you
did the steel work.
Now, just before that, you did a 5-year apprenticeship. When that finished, was there a ceremony, a big celebration, nothing at all? They just say, "Here's your bit of paper." Off.
You go to the pub on Friday night and
all you've got is a piece of paper. I can show you. It's out there somewhere. About that big.
It's a certificate, Tom, isn't it?
A small certificate saying you finished your apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what did you feel it was a big achievement? Or?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, 5 years for it. So.
Yeah.
And it was very handy, wasn't it, when you went to look for other jobs overseas? Yeah,
that was your key.
Yeah.
To getting a job.
Yeah. So when you'd finished, did that mean that you were finished with the business as well? Where you became a normal employee?
I became a normal employee. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's when I decided, which was the business had grown a bit considerably over the years, from 1950 to 55.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, and they're taking on more staff as well?
We had a few more staff, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Of which one was an Australian.
Is that significant?
Yeah, because he and I got Cobbery in. And, of course, he went back to Australia, and, of course, I got the invitation to go to his place.
Okay.
And that's how I got over there.
Whereabouts in Australia?
Melbourne.
Okay. So how was that?
Oh, most interesting.
Yeah?
Most interesting.
Well, did Australia seem very different to
you? Oh, huge.
Why, because it was a big centre? I've
never seen so many people in all my life.
From Ashurst to Melbourne, it would be a hell of a shock.
Well, did you find it quite different? Were Australians and New Zealanders very different?
For a cup of tea.
No, not no different.
No?
No okay. different, no. Spoke yeah. a bit different, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It was the suburbs that I was in, a place called Williamstown, which had a naval dockyard there,
mm-hmm.
and I got a job there.
Yeah, and it was the same sort of work that you've been doing?
As a fitter welder.
Yeah, yeah.
I lasted there 3 days.
Oh.
What is that?
And there was something wrong with the place. I had a feeling. I wasn't happy.
Mm. Yep.
And I had a feeling that... Anyway, I didn't turn up on the fourth day.
Mm-hmm.
I went and got another job.
Mm-hmm. Which was easy to
yep, do. In those
you
days
just walked you down the road and... Yep.
I got a job in the glass manufacturing. There's a fitter welder in this big glass, what they call the Australian glass manufacturers, which was at a mm-hmm. place called Spotswood, which was down the railway line a bit from where I was born in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I got that job, the next day, the following day, the job that I had before in the dockyard went on strike.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if I hadn't got a job,
yeah,
I would not get another job until that strike.
You wouldn't be allowed to. Yeah.
So I was lucky.
Yeah. Did the strike last a long time? Or
several months.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Mm. So you would have had to go back to New Zealand, basically.
Well, yeah. We'll get out of it somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a learning curve for me.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Go with your gut feeling.
Because in the meantime, you've got to get all your union fees jacked all up and all that paraphernalia. Lucky poo.
So, now, was that your first exposure to unions?
Yeah. Because apprenticeships are not incorporated in a union.
Yeah. So did that shape your view of unions?
Well, I knew about unions, yes, but I mean, we never got bothered with them here in New Zealand to the extent that they do over there.
Yeah, yeah.
They're very, very strong on unions. Well, they were then. Mm. I suppose they're still the same now.
Yeah, but they were in certain areas here,
weren't they?
Mm. Tom, then when did you go out to the Blue Mountains?
Yeah, well, I was with the Australian glass manufacturer. It was a huge building, covered 80 acres.
Oh, what was your wage there?
That's interesting. Probably about £40 a week.
Oh, would be a lot then.
Huge difference. Gosh.
Yeah, mind you, we work Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could get Saturday... Get Sunday, you've got double time and triple time and all that sort of thing.
Oh, That's huge money.
Yeah.
Well, for them.
And how old were you at that stage? About 20?
20.
20, yeah. So did you save much, or it just went?
Say no more.
Well, I had to pay rent, of course.
Yeah.
I did save some.
Yeah, yeah. Was it a high wage compared to many other jobs, do you think?
Oh, I think it was on a par.
About the normal for there. But higher than New Zealand at that time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And another thing was, you got a, what they call a TA, a tradesman's assistant, with you.
Okay, yeah.
And he was the bloke that carried your toolbox and that sort of thing, and did all the donkey work, and here we come, you see, in the 50s, late 50s, there was 1 million foreigners came to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Italians,
Lithuanians, Greeks, Germans.
Mm. Yeah.
Finns,
yeah,
you name it.
Yeah. So, what about your? Did you have one TA for your time there?
He was an Italian.
Yeah. How old was he?
I tell a lie. He was a German.
Yeah.
He was a German. Yeah, a young fella.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he couldn't talk much English, and I couldn't talk any German, so we got on well.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what happened? He became an apprentice. Was it sort of an apprentice role at the same time?
Or? Well, no. He was just a labourer.
Yeah. Okay.
And I mean, there was dozens of them, especially people in the, I suppose, the 30s and the 40s.
Yeah.
And that young people.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose they missed out several years during the war and so on.
There was lots of them were. Tradespeople.
Yeah, yeah.
But, run-of-the-mill, these and that. Yeah.
So what was the attitude to a German in Australia after the... given the
Well, I mean, that I couldn't tell you. I mean, he was accepted.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Providing he kept his opinion to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was quite an interesting job.
And how long were you in that job?
About a couple of months.
Just very short. Yeah.
Yeah, I was only over there for 7 months or something, all told.
So but then you moved on again.
You mean for £40 a week, and you walked away from it?
Then I shifted there and got more in the Blue Mountains.
Were you running away from some young woman?
I went up into the Snowy River scheme, which was the big dam scheme in Australia, and I worked on a little bit of a dam there called Island, a place called Island Bend.
Mm-hmm.
Here again, it was a camp situation, where you had a hut, and I had an Irishman. That was me.
I thought you said it was Italian.
No, not there.
Oh, okay.
And what were your wages there? What was your wage?
About this, bit probably a bit more there, because I was on shift work there, which here was another experience that I hadn't experienced.
And you were only 20 still. You were young.
I had to say that I was 21.
Okay.
Because in Australia, you couldn't be an apprentice, couldn't be a tradesman under 21.
Heavens.
Oh. Yeah, so I
and they
changed.
Didn't check, they didn't look. Did you need a passport to get there?
Yeah.
But they just didn't look. They looked at your certificate.
No, I didn't have a passport in those days. You didn't need a passport.
Didn't
you?
No, I don't think you did.
Okay. No, that's right. You didn't need a passport.
Okay.
But I had my ticket, you see.
Yes.
That was the thing.
That's right, they called them a ticket, didn't they? Right.
Yeah.
Ticket to freedom.
So I was a couple of months up there at the.
And what did that work involve?
Underground.
Yeah?
Yeah, helping with digging a hole and shoring it up.
Using your skills? Or?
Oh, yeah, you would. Yeah. I mean, I was just a tradesman working for a firm. Yeah. You're told what to do, and away you go.
Yeah, but what I mean, you are used to working with sort of iron and steel and so on.
Yeah,
so.
Well, this is iron. Yeah.
So I was using that to shore up the...
You've probably heard of the Snowy River.
Yes, yeah.
Well, this is actually working on the Snowy River.
Okay. At
a little place called Island Bend, where they put a dam up.
Yeah.
And out of that dam, they've got a funnel that goes up.
Okay.
And the overflow from, instead of going down over the dam...
Yeah.
Goes down this funnel and goes out, and it fills up another great big lake, Lake Yukambini, which is huge. It's huge. It's got, I don't know, 4 or 5 times the capacity of Sydney Harbour.
Yeah.
And that's only one of the dams. So that was that job. That was quite interesting in that job.
Tom, was it at that job that somebody put a snake in your sleeping bag
So anyway, I was
Well, now just if you were in, it was in a camp. Was there much social life, right? And much to do when you're not working there?
Not a hell of a lot. You went down to a little township when you're off, and you could have a few beers down there and a bit of skylarking and. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you were on shift work, I mean, you didn't have much time to.
So when you say you don't have much time, so was it, when you say shift, was it an 8-hour shift? And then, or,
3 8-hour shifts, you see.
Okay,
So, I mean, they didn't stop, you know.
So what shifts were you doing? They rotate you through?
You get rotated through.
Yeah. And how did you find that?
Well, I was gobsmacked actually to start with because I'd never done any shift work or anything. And,
was it difficult?
The first two shifts were all right, but the 11 till 7 in the morning, 11 at night, I mean, when you're having lunch or dinner at 7:30, 8 o'clock, the other blokes are having breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting down to a 3-course meal virtually, and they're having porridge and stuff alongside you.
and it's all catered for you, was
So, how did you get from the camp down to the wherever you had your beer in the local township?
Well, there they had a bus system sort of thing that you could get on.
Okay,
And so that was quite interesting. But then I shifted out of there after a couple of months, or 6 weeks, or a couple of months or something.
This is part 3 of 5. Tune in next week for part 4.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.